crazy, spectacular, uncanny Rebel Radio podcast, which you can find at www.therebelradiopodcast.com.
That's
the
right.
Home of the Rebel Radio podcast for 10 years. So that's right.
And we're for gonna, the foreseeable future.
We're about 5 weeks away from our official 10th anniversary week. But, you know, and yeah. And for the foreseeable future, we plan on keep on trekking along as long as we're able and desire to do so. And, you know, and yeah, that's about the best way to put it.
Best way to put it. Able-bodied, able mind, you know.
Keep on doing our thing and returning to Compalooza, we're sure next, well, not next month, but month after that, you know.
In a couple of weeks, we'll be able to say next month.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we'll go from there as we trek on. And almost to 400 episodes as well. And man, sometimes that blows my mind more than the 10 years because, you know, you realize as you get older, 10 years is a blink. You know, you don't think about it as much. But 400 episodes, like you put that in perspective, you're like, holy shit, that's a lot of time, effort, and and subjects spoken about, and movies talked about, and you know, so that's like wow, that's mind blowing, you know, because you think about podcasts and how many there are now. I mean, everyone's got a podcast,
a lot.
You know, and we're not saying that we're better than anyone else or that we would ever discourage anyone from getting a podcast, but a lot of people do podcasts and they don't make it 10 episodes, let alone 400. You know, so
there have been so many that they start off and they're like, oh yeah, this is going to be great. And then, it's like, you get a couple episodes in and you're just like, oh, this is, you know,
yeah,
I want instant spectacular results and, they're not there. So
that's it. So, I mean, you know, we have something to say about longevity, even if we don't get 1,000 listeners every episode or whatever, we've hung in there.
Yeah.
And, through thick and thin and are still doing our thing.
Yeah. But, you know, if you're listening, your mom's probably listening to us saying, who are those sexy guys? So there's that.
There is that. I mean, I listen to myself and I think, man, he's a sexy beast. Yeah.
All right. Damn, dude, this must be one of those 800 lines. You're like, nope, right. I'm listening to myself. Yep.
Yeah. We can start a new podcast, Matt. Hello. This is the Love Line Connection. Call me just, Matt for lover's advice.
We're going to talk about rom-coms.
Yeah. And, what do you do? You come home and you find her with a bottle on her vag instead of your penis. We will tell you what to
do. we'll tell you what to do. Call a doctor. Yeah.
Wait, what kind? Never mind. Anyway, what kind of doctor? Wham. Ooh. Okay.
Left field.
So, yeah, I completely forgot what I was going to talk about because you distracted me with models and
all that good stuff
and stuff. There was something I specifically had in my mind to talk about, and then now I'm like, wait, what was it?
Did you see Frozen Empire? Is that what
No. I'm seeing that over the weekend. Dude, we finally got our look at this Alien Romulus trailer.
What's creepy?
It's creepy. It's kind of got a vibe going back to the original film. It's weird. I'm confused by this because the director says that he got comments from James Cameron and Ridley Scott when they watched the film. But and I believe him. I'm not saying he's lying. And that Cameron and Ridley Scott both gave their blessing and gave some suggestions with some edits and stuff to make the film a little bit better. But I also like thought Ridley Scott had nothing to do with this other than producer by name, because then just a few years ago, he's like, fuck Fox. No one sees making an alien movie unless I do it. So he signed some paperwork to make sure he got his name on any future projects.
Yeah.
And like, so like, was he really involved with this film other than by name? So like, did Ridley Scott really watch the movie?
Yeah. Did they just, you know, show him some, you know, screenwrite, you know, some illustration? I don't know.
He's definitely become grumpy old man as he's gotten older. And should he remind people that you made Alien Covenant, dude, which was a train wreck.
Yeah.
So don't act like you're the only person that can make an alien movie. You know, I enjoyed Prometheus, but Covenant was a clusterfuck. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, the trailer, it looks cool. I mean, it's kind of a weird release. He's got that August release date, which is always interesting because you're kind of past the summer movie season. You're back to school and football starting and, like, you know, will it find an audience that time of the year? You know,
that's a big question.
But I like the vibe of it. It looked cool. You know, it definitely felt more in line with Ridley and Cameron's first two films than some of the newer Alien films did. So I will give it that.
And I like Alvarez's Evil Dead. It was different, but it was definitely in the same vein as Evil Dead, and, you know, was a solid horror movie on its own. So I know he's going to be able to make the aliens pretty scary, and, you know, make you jump out of your seat a little bit, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. You know, the Alien franchise is something that, you know, we've talked about before, like Alien Predator, two really cool characters, and they're always intertwined together because of the Alien vs. Predator comics and spinoffs and stuff. And so I definitely think there's more room for this universe to have more Alien movies. It almost felt like, comparing to Predator, it felt like going back to Prey, taking a very simple Predator story and telling a really good story. It almost feels like that might be what they're trying to do with Romulus. And it's a good time because when people forget, the Alien FX television series is also in the works, and that's supposed to be out sometime within the next year as well. So I think that's pretty cool. So we'll see how Romulus turns out. The other big trailer this week was our first look at Star Wars The Acolyte, which is the latest series for Disney Plus, coming out June 4th. And this takes place 1,000 years before the events of The Phantom Menace. And my first thoughts on it was, I like it. I like the look of it. But I also felt like when I'm picturing 1,000 years before The Phantom Menace, I'm expecting a completely different looking Star Wars universe at that time, but it still felt really familiar.
Yeah.
And maybe that's taken out of context because we don't know what the context is. I guess I was thinking it was going to look really different than it did.
Like KOTOR-ish?
Well, not even that. Just a different look. Mm-hmm. Like even Andor has a different look. It doesn't feel like it's Star Wars, even though it is. And that's kind of what where the Acolyte trailer just still felt like it. It's hard to convey that it takes place 1,000 years before just from the trailer. Cause it just looked like Star Wars, you know? So it looked familiar, but yet I wanted it to look a little more alien, I guess. And maybe it will as it plays out. You know, it's definitely a teaser. It doesn't tell us much. It tells us very little about the plot. You know, other than we know that it seems to be a time of peace and harmony, and it looks like there's going to be some bad people show up to cause trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm excited for it. I mean, I'm always down for Star Wars, and I thought it was cool. You know, it's making me wonder what happened to the skeleton crew show, because I thought that thing was shot before COVID, and where's it at? I thought it would come out before The Acolyte.
It's on the shelf somewhere.
Yeah, you know. But no, we're getting that first. So, but I thought it was cool. You know, it's cool. Yellow lightsabers are cool.
Yeah. You know, when it playing KOTOR, it was cool, you know, having that Sentinel class. Or was that was KOTOR too. I want to say was the yellow lightsaber. But it's always cool seeing that manifested on the screen. So, you know, that legacy stuff is taking place in a canon universe.
Yellow lightsabers even go back to the early toys. They miscolored Obi-Wan and Luke's lightsabers in the packaging. They had yellow lightsabers.
Oh shit.
They had yellow lightsaber toys back then. So that's going way back, you know.
That's I know. Didn't they miscolor Luke's white at one point?
No, it was yellow.
Yeah. It was yellow?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was white.
And then some of the early footage of the film, Obi-Wan's looked white when it lit up until they fixed all the coloring grades. You know,
maybe it was Obi-Wan's.
Like that. Yeah. So
nice.
But yeah. But no, it looks cool. You know, so it's, yeah, I'm down more Star
Wars. I'm down for more Star Wars too, buddy.
And then lastly, the other big trailer I saw this week was the new trailer for Furiosa, a Mad Max Saga. And man, I like this trailer even better than the first one. And I was already sold on the movie, the first trailer, but the new trailer is like, it's fucking cool. You know, this might be a movie we might have to pull the boys together to go see, even though it comes out the weekend we're at Comicpalooza. We're going to have to find some time and try to pull the boys together, I think, to go see this. And,
that would have to be on a Friday.
Yeah. You know, and see what we can do. Cause it just feels like it's going to be as epic as Fury Road was. You know?
Yeah. No, it definitely looks like it's a continuation, even though it's a prequel.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
So the same vein, yeah.
Yeah, look, the action looks the same. The high octane driving looks the same. So I'm excited for it.
You got Chris Hemsworth with a funny looking nose.
Yes, yeah, you do. And Immortan Joe is back.
Yeah. Well, different actor, obviously. Since the other one has passed away. But the second trailer delves into that really briefly. You know, it looks like it shows how Furiosa must, you know, she sides with him eventually because she's working for him at the beginning of Fury Road.
Mm-hmm.
So we can see how her relationship forms with Joe and how that comes to be. But man, I'm definitely excited for that one. It's probably up there in my top three summer movies easily. You know, so definitely looking forward to it.
Definitely. Yeah.
But those were the big trailers this week. And I also know that we got a trailer for Beetlejuice today. I'm just not interested in it, man. I just, I'm not a big fan of the original films. I just have really, it's something that, you know, if it goes streaming down the road, I'll watch it. But just not, I don't know. I just can't get into it. You know?
I'll rent it when it comes to like the $5.99 rental.
Yeah.
But I'm probably not going to go to theaters to see it. You know, it's I know Keaton's back and it looks like it could be good. Ortega's, you know, hot right now. Winona Ryder has, you know, got some.
Yeah, but I feel like they put in that just because she was Wednesday.
Yeah.
But she did the goth thing. Oh, let's show
Ortega in this. And Scream. She's Scream 5 and Scream 6. And she was an ex. So she's like, she's kind of making her, you know, case to this, to be this new Jamie Lee Curtis Scream Queen kind of thing. Something like that. So
yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. I'm interested, but not a lot. I want it to be convenient for my watching.
And before we get into some things we watched this week, I want to do a little backtracking. First off, at the end of talking about the Crow trailer last week, I don't know why I thought that song in the trailer was the band Bullet for My Valentine or whatever. It's Post Malone and Ozzy. They're doing that song in the trailer.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't know why I got that backwards. You know, a little retraction there in case some Ozzy Osbourne fan comes out and calls me out on that. And I have to bite the head off of a bat or pee on the Alamo or something. I don't know how this happened as we were going off the air a couple weeks ago and we did not bring it up last week. I can't believe. And that was a passing of Akira Toriyama, the creator of Dragon Ball. And, Dragon Ball is one of those, animes and mangas that is right up there, I think, with characters like Spider-Man and Batman that most everyone in the world has heard the name. Maybe they don't know who Goku is or Vegeta or what that, but they've heard the name Dragon Ball. It's arguably the most popular, most influential manga anime of all time. And he was creator and he passed away. And I felt bad. Like, man, how do we forget to pay tribute to him last week? So parallel tribute to him now. And I think people say like you can credit him for making anime and manga mainstream in the US to an extent, but he had a lot of help with that. And what I mean by that, if Cartoon Network doesn't exist in Tsunami, he doesn't have that help, you know?
Yeah.
And to be fair, I don't want to take anything away from Speed Racer and Robotech and Battle of the Planets and some of the anime that was already here, you know, that those were the grandfathers and Dragon Ball was the grandchild that blew up if that's fair to say, because it's easy for people to give Dragon Ball all the credit because it was so big. But
Ronin there were Warriors.
Things, yeah, but there were things that came before it. So we got to give them their credit too, that paved the way for Dragon Ball. And the success of a Pokemon, I mean, honestly, too, also helped pave that way. People forget the late 90s was a big time for Pokemon, and then it paved the way for Dragon Ball, because Tsunami and Cartoon Network, what was the name of the late night show they had?
Adult Swim.
Adult Swim probably doesn't exist if it's not for the success of Pokemon cards, because they realized there was a market for adult anime. So it was an interesting time. And, but that said, not to take away at all from what Akira created, because man, it's an amazing phenomenon of how popular Dragon Ball is to our children. Matt, you know, they all like it. And you're a big fan. And you can walk into, who would ever thought you could walk into Walmart and buy Dragon Ball t-shirts and toys and things like that. Yeah. Even maybe 10 years ago, that wasn't possible. I mean, you know, and now they have all lines of stuff. You just have to go to a comic book store to find this stuff.
And then or KB Toys did have some stuff.
Right.
A lot of the, like, you know.
But again, that was a niche toy store in the mall for toys.
Exactly.
You know, it wasn't a mass market toy store.
No, you go there, you find Resident Evil toys, you find a lot of stuff. But yeah, you'd have to go to one of those specialty shops that just dealt with manga, anime. There used to be a shop like that in Willowbrook Mall, but it didn't last long.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, those kind of shops just didn't last back then, because they were so niche. So
niche, yeah. But man, I remember every day, you know, coming home and, you know, watching episodes and, you know, waiting for the next one that would follow. And next time on Dragon Ball Z.
Right.
And then sometimes it would just reset. Like Goku would fight Captain Ginyu, and then it'd get up to the, you know, where he's going to fight Frieza. And then it would go back to the battle with the Ginyu Force for some reason. A lot of people know that, but you know, getting the, you know, Goku turning Super Saiyan, you know, pushing past your limits, you know, and all the Z fighters, you know, he created quite the universe.
There's been new, you know, news out of Japan is always sparse and hard to come by, and there's been speculation what happens now with the new anime that's coming out, the Dragon Ball Super follow-up. But word is that Akira, you know, he knew he was sick and not well, but he didn't know, but he also thought he had more time, but apparently things were left in place for the manga for the anime to move forward, and that it will still be getting released, hopefully soon. So we have to wait for news on that, you know, as the Japan and all the animators, everybody, mourn his passing as Dragon Ball continues to move forward. And what a legacy, man, you know, that he created. I mean, it's right up there with some of the great fandoms of our time, whether it's Star Wars or Star Trek, or just to be mentioned in those fandoms, I mean, that Dragon Ball is right up there, you know, just how successful it is.
You could argue that it's the grandfather of popular
modern anime.
Modern anime.
I just wanted to make sure we gave credit to the stuff that came that paved the way for Dragon Ball.
All
that stuff too. You know.
But did Lupin the Third come out before him? Before Dragon Ball?
It might have been. It was pretty early on too.
Yeah.
Mid-90s, early 90s.
But it's like all these, like Bleach, One Piece, Naruto, all that stuff doesn't happen if Dragon Ball doesn't happen.
Lupin the Third was in the 70s, so yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there's you know, plenty that come after Hunter x Hunter.
One Piece was late 90s, so you know, when it first started, so it's a kind of close to that same area. Even though I know the first Dragon Ball was what, 86 87?
Yeah, 86 87.
Yeah, so but yeah, you know, just we forgot to mention him last week, but rest in peace, Akira Toriyama. Did I say it right? Toriyama.
Yeah, Kiratoriyama.
I jokingly sent a text like, if you're Japanese and have a child, name him Akira, because he's going to do badass shit.
Yeah, dude.
Where he creates Dragon Ball, where he directs films like Kurosawa, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, just the dude who played in the early Godzilla films, his name was Akira. I mean, yeah, you're going to be a badass if your name is
Akira. Yeah, dude. And then, of course, the anime Akira.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and speaking of badasses, I watched a film I had never seen this week before because it was on Netflix and I saw it was leaving Netflix. So I was like, I'm going to watch this. And that is Sonny Chiba's The Street Fighter. You know, it's a highly influential film. You know, Quentin Tarantino names it as one of his favorites. John Woo, and he, you know, is one of his favorite directors, inspired him to be a director. And you watch this, and it's, you know, it's real low budget. You know, it's cut by hand. There's stuff in it that doesn't make sense, like, because the way it's cut. Like, there's one scene where this guy gets hit, but then this lady's laying on the ground. It's like, why is she laying on the ground? She was standing up a minute ago. Yeah. But it's got this charm to it, man. And Sonny is so charismatic that he sells the film. And it's only like an hour and 15 minutes long. And it kind of ends with not really an ending, but then it says, don't worry, the Street Fighter will be back in the return of the Street Fighter. So it's like a serialized thing, right?
Yeah.
But it's cool. And when you watch it, you see the influences. You can see where Quentin borrowed from it, where John Woo borrowed from it. Where Bruce Lee films borrowed from it. I mean, you know, I think the only thing that kept Sonny from being as popular as Bruce Lee was that he's not quite as handsome. He's a little more rugged, and he's not quite as charismatic as Bruce was. He's definitely got an on-screen presence, but he's just not like as vibrant charismatically as Bruce was.
Okay.
But it was cool, man. I was like, this is cool. I'm glad I watched it. You know, it's in English on Netflix, and the English dub is one of those old 1960s terrible English dubs, but yet still watchable, you know, where the voices don't always match and you're like kind of laughing like this dude's voice doesn't even match what this dude looks like, but you know, mm-hmm. you go with it. Just a cool film, the highly influential movie. And I wonder if any of that's the only one that had on Netflix. I know there was a series of those Street Fighter films. I'll have to see if any of them are streaming anywhere, maybe try to check out some more of them. But it was cool stuff. That's probably the only movie I watched this week. And then I checked out the first two episodes of X-Men 97, and it's badass. I mean,
yeah,
it's really good seeing the X-Men return. It's amazing how it fits right in the same vein where they left off in the 90s. And by the way, to answer some of your questions and text messages, I'm going to go through this kind of quick for you sons of bitches that don't think you remember the X-Men better than you did. So first off, even though they're treating Professor X as though he's dead, remember the series ends with Lilandra taking him to the Shi'ar homeworld for treatment. So we don't know if he's actually dead. They left that open. People forget that Morph was resurrected and freed from his mind control and had been working through his PTSD, because it kind of happens really quickly late in the show. People forget that Morph didn't come back. People were asking why Bishop's in it. Well, Bishop actually never succeeded in his mission to change his post-apocalyptic future. So he'd been hanging around on Earth all this time.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Burner. So he's Bishop. Like, I guess he decided to join the team. People, why is Wolverine being nice all of a sudden? Well, people forget, he stopped kind of being a creep about Jean Grey, and him and Jean and Scott started getting along afterwards. He agreed.
He still has that antics
towards Scott. Yeah, but he agreed in season two that he was going to, you know, treat Jean good. So that's what he's been doing.
Yeah.
People forget the Apocalypse resurrected himself by taking over the body of Fabian Cortez. And people also forget, like, it does take place in a larger Marvel universe, and that's why there's some mentions of other characters in there. So I think it's off to a really good start. I love the introduction of Nathan Summers, who, of course, becomes Cable later on. Mm-hmm. I think that was really cool. I was hooked two episodes in. I laughed at your comment about why is Gambit wearing this. I'm like, it's 1997, dude. I mean, people wore weird shit. I don't know. I mean, I just go with it.
He's wearing a midriff shirt, man.
I know.
You know,
NSYNC, man, Backstreet Boys. Come on now.
I don't know, man. He ain't Backstreet Boys. He's more badass, you know. But, you know, I get it. I'm just not like, at least it was like a rocker kind of shirt. So he kind of gets away from it. I was like, what the hell is it? I was like, what is this?
But overall, man, it's amazing how it fits like right into where it left off in the 90s.
The action is
90s ish, but yet,
dude,
yet cleaned up animation. I love the new Magneto story. I think that's really cool. You know, continuing on the legacy of his.
Does it look like Magneto is wearing lipstick?
I don't know. It wasn't like his lips.
It looks a little like Maybe he got some. Maybe he's got some lip balm on there. He had some dry lips. Maybe.
But you know, that iteration of the X-Men, a lot of it based off of, you know, Jim Lee's artwork from that time is some of my favorite costumes and my favorite animation. So I'm excited to see this back. And
I like that they kept the color scheme, the theme. And then that superhero landing that Cyclops gives is just freaking awesome.
That was awesome.
Just fucking blasts the ground. If you haven't seen it yet, watch at least the first episode, and then you'll be like, you know, and then you're left on a cliffhanger on the second episode.
I know.
Which is pretty damn cool.
I
was
like, God, I wait till Wednesday for the next
one. Yeah. I went to go, I went to go see if there was a next, and there wasn't. It was just trying to get me to watch, some of the Apocalypse episodes from the original series. But
yeah,
it was fun. It was fun to watch. I got the kids were watching it with me, so they're into it too.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. It makes me you know, start thinking about what other, you know, what other shows could they ever do like this, you know? And because it has to be done right, you know.
Spider-Man, maybe.
Well, Spider-Man though, the problem with Spider-Man is it was done on Fox kids morning programs. The X-Men was on the afternoon, so it was a little bit different. Where Spider-Man, you know, you notice he never punches anybody in the show. All he ever uses is web because it was part of the president's nonviolence thing. And man, I try to watch Spider-Man now, and like, it doesn't hold up as well as X-Men or Batman does. It still has some good episodes, don't get me wrong. But it's like, could you continue it? And really, would people buy into that same, you know, 90s nostalgia? Say, you know, because the X-Men, I think, fits a little bit better to keep up with it.
Yeah.
And I think, it too, with Spider-Man, we've also had a lot more Spider-Man cartoons since then. Where X-Men, we haven't. We had Wolverine, the X-Men, and then the X-Men Evolution. But that was about it, you know.
Yeah, that's true. You didn't have as much in between. You could kind of go back to the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, it's pretty cool stuff, man. And I hope it continues to be as good. You know, critics seem to really be loving it, too. So it's gotten really good reviews so far.
Yeah.
But that's really all I watched this week, was just Street Fighter and or the Street Fighter. Let's not confuse it with the Van Damme video game movie. And and the first couple. Well, I did watch. I may have kept up with Bad Batch. I've gotten a couple weeks behind on Shogun. I get caught back up on that.
I noticed that Invincible had a new episode on there, and I watched the new episode of Invincible. I like how this series is going. I think it's very entertaining. Definitely get caught up if you're not caught up yet. But it's crazy how brutal it is, but fun. Other than that, I did. I was curious and just wanted to see Euphoria. And I watched like the first three episodes, and then I thought it was weird. So I was just like, no, no.
It's too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like everyone's just fucking.
I mean,
and
Sydney
fucking
Sweeney's not much, but
doing
else.
Drugs. Yeah. Sydney, you know, just watch the first episode though.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to see, you know, Sydney. And then. I did watch Kung Fu Panda 3 because I saw it was on Netflix, and you know, I'd seen Kung Fu Panda 4 last week and wanted to work my way back. And it's I can see why it barely made any money. So it was like a budget of almost like $180 million because you had Angelina Jolie still voicing Tigress, you had Jackie Chan still voicing Monkey. Seth Rogen still voicing Mantis, and you know, you just had way too many. Who voiced the bad guy? I think it was it Cranston? I think Cranston's in there too. So it's like, that's a lot of money you had to shell out. So Kung Fu Panda 3 barely made anything, but it was still successful. And 4, I looked at 4, the budget was $85 million, and a lot of those characters are. Like, they just say that they're somewhere else. And I'm like, that's a good way to save, like, you know, almost $100 million. Just not including them in the movie. But it looks like Kung Fu Panda 4 is going to make way more than its budget. So it's going to be a success. Maybe we'll get a 5. Who knows? And then I took your advice and I watched Aquaman. It wasn't as bad as a lot of people make it out to be. It's fun. I wish there was a bigger battle with the bad guy, the big bad guy at the end. Cause I feel like, you know, you've got this like all powerful, necromancer type, you know,
yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I feel like he was defeated too fast, but you know, at that point there was a lot going on. You can't really drag the film out like that.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah. And it was entertaining.
I mean, you definitely can feel like there were probably some cuts in there where they had to cut out the cameos of certain things.
Yeah.
You know, I could sense that, you know, but other than that, you know, like I said, I enjoyed it.
I did try to watch Nick Cage's Dream Scenario just to watch it because it's, you know, it's streaming. So I was like, oh, I don't have to pay for it. And so I watched like half of it. And I fell asleep and woke up and I was like, oh, maybe I'll finish it tomorrow. And
feels like tomorrow Nick Cage never happened. Movies like they make porn movies. Every week he's got a new one out.
It does feel like that. Yeah. I will say that me and the wife tried to watch Mean Girls. I'm not going to lie, just to see how it is. And it's a musical. So Frank,
this stuff on the podcast, Matt.
Yeah, well, boy, you know,
like, I'm not going to sit here on the podcast and tell people that I sat down and watched about an hour of the Eras Tour, but with my daughter at least, because she asked to watch it, not because I wanted to.
Yeah. Well, Jackie wanted to watch it. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, sure. We know who really wanted to watch it, Matt. You wanted to watch me.
I just wanted to see Lindsay Lohan again, man.
Yeah.
Just wanted to see Lindsay Lohan again. No, but
it's like that time you watched Pretty Little Liars.
Oh yeah. Hey, that story was interesting, man. The story was interesting.
Here's the saddest part, and I will admit this on the podcast, is like,
yeah,
as I'm watching the Taylor Swift thing with Waverly, first off, I give Taylor credit, man. The show, I can see why it sold out everywhere. It's spectacular looking. I mean, you get your money's worth, you know. But how many songs I recognize and even know it? I must hear them on radio at work, or I've heard them in the car and even realize, like, hey, I've heard this. I had no idea it was her. You
know? Holy crud. Like,
yeah, I don't know them.
And I didn't know it.
No. Damn, I won't go that far. Okay. But I was like, wow, I actually recognize some of this. And I was like, I didn't realize I had heard these songs before. You know? but is that also, though, a testament to her popularity, man? She's arguably the biggest pop star in the world since Michael Jackson. And you knew Michael Jackson songs, even if you weren't a fan.
Yeah.
You know, you had heard him in different commercials or different places. And I think that's a testament to her popularity. We probably heard him in commercials or in the background. We didn't even realize it was her, you know.
Shopping at the store, it's playing in the background, you know.
And that's what it is. It's just how popular she is right now. And, you know, it's cool. Hey, you know, I think that when it comes to music, there's it's too easy to like say a genre sucks because you don't like it. You know, it's okay to like Taylor Swift, or if you were like the Backstreet Boys when they came out, because there's a market for all that stuff. Everything has a market, and like what you like, you don't have to apologize for it. You know, now if you start listening to, I was going to totally take a jab at you there, but I don't have one, but you know, but you know, yeah, I mean, there's
Richard
a market
for, Cheese.
Yeah,
I do listen to Richard Cheese.
Yeah, I know it is, but that's more like niche music, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, but no, when it comes to music, there's a market for everything, you know, and it's fine. If you're into it, you're into it. It doesn't mean you have to make fun of someone for liking it, you know?
Yeah.
But then what's old is new again. I read today that Dr. Dre and Eminem are both going to have new albums out this year.
Oh, shit.
Dr. Dre hasn't made an album in years, and he's making it with Snoop. So that's pretty cool. So,
that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
We're back in the 90s.
That's it. But, you know, but yeah, so good stuff, man. Matt and his Mean Girls movie. No. All right. Well, let's get into today's featured film. This is a movie, 1995. For some reason, I thought this was older, which I guess 1995
Came out it came out in theaters still in 96. Like it was like staggered release. So it was coming out in 95 and 96. So
it was definitely a movie that was designed around, it's based on a short story by Philip K. Dick, the writer of Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. And, it was, you know, they definitely were trying to cash in on some of Peter Weller's science fiction fame from the time. Cause he had done, RoboCop, of course, and I think he was in Leviathan, which was also kind of an underground, you know, sci-fi film. Mm-hmm. And the movie is called Screamers. And this was a first time watch for you, Matt.
It was a first time watch.
It's funny. I was watching it this week, and amazingly how much I remembered of it. You know, because I was like, I kind of dig this movie because I think it's one of those movies that has a lot of bold ideas, which are really cool.
Yeah.
But then some of them don't work. There's also a lot of stuff in that like is easy to make fun of, especially the last 5 minutes of the movie where all these twists and turns are happening. You're like, wait, wait a minute. What? Wait, she's a robot. Wait, she's a robot. You're like, wait, what?
Oh, robots.
His buddy shows back up and his buddy's a robot. You're like,
yeah,
wait, what the fuck's going on here?
We're all robots.
And he's like, wait, did he boink a robot? You're like confused about that. You know, he wanted to boink a robot.
He did. He definitely did.
But since it's your first time watch, I'll let you give it a quick summary.
Yeah. So there is basically a nuclear war that breaks out between the Alliance and the ESB. I think it's called ESB.
Something like that. Yeah.
USB, CPU, you know. And so the Alliance creates the autonomous replicating sword. And they're basically they call them screamers because of the sound they make whenever they attack people. They wear a device. The Alliance wears a device on their wrist to cloak their heartbeat so that the screamers do not sense them. And instead they sense their enemy, who they have been at war with for years. Peter Weller is the basically the, you know, in charge of the base where they get a message from their leader, played by Empire Strikes Back I forget the actor's name and I don't have the IMDb page in front of me, but their leader shows up, says, hey, there's talks of peace. We need you to go to the ESB, send two men, peace talks, you know, make it happen. So before they can leave and do that, there is a vessel that crashes and they pull Ace from the wreckage and find out that message was fictitious, possibly, and that there are no peace talks, and that they were actually headed to another planet to wage war again and battle on that planet. So they decide to head to their enemy's headquarters to see if there actually is peace talks. While they're there, they encounter a boy who's not really a boy, and they find out that this autonomous sword has evolved and started sentient, basically creating new beings, kind of like Skynet did. You know, Skynet had all those evolutions, and eventually, just like Skynet, they did create humans, which is who he runs into. There's a psychopathic named better I forget his name, but it's he's like crazy though, kills Ace. And then at the end, I guess they try and force a romantic scene with the chick from Freddy, Nightmare on Elm Street 3. She's the dream warrior girl that used to be addicted to meth, I guess. And she's like, in my dream, I'm bad. And she pulls out like two switchblades and she's got a mohawk. She looks good in this film, you know. She does her part, but they try and force
that guy's name.
Becker. But yeah, they try and force a romance between her and Peter Weller. And he's just like,
it's like the movie's just tagging along. And
darn, all of a sudden you're the prettiest thing I've ever seen. I
know. It's so weird. You're like, wait, he's just kissing her. A minute ago, they're trying to survive and not die. Yeah. Now they're in the snow and he's kissing her. And it's like, and he's
dead or alive, you're coming with me.
Yeah, let's just do it right here in the snow.
Yeah. And then she's like, oh my God, she thinks I'm pretty, you know, and she falls in love. But I think what that you can argue that does is it shows how more advanced she is than Becker.
and that she doesn't want to kill Peter Weller's character. But her the previous models do. And then that's when you find out that his second in command was also a robot, his friend.
Yeah.
And then he escapes. And then lo and behold, you see the teddy bear that he tried to keep from the boy who was actually a blade, a sword, come to life. And you can only assume that he dies, which he does. And they explain that in Screamers, The Hunt, which came out in like 2009. It's a sequel. And they do say that he basically crashed his pod upon entry.
Into, I heard it's like a Earth's sequel, atmosphere. And it's almost exactly like the same movie too. I read
basically, but they do have the humans evolve, or the human like screamers evolve to where they have like their mandibles that open up, and it's pretty creepy. But it's kind of the same thing as this film. It's a little got some cheesiness in there, and it didn't really work. But hey, you know, this film was probably a really big success on home DVD because, you know, even though it didn't do so well at the box office, it made enough money to where Sony's like, hey, let's do a sequel. So I think this film had a place on home video, mm-hmm. and that's where it had most of its success.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely become kind of a cult classic over the years. You know, it's one of those movies that like, when press was done for it, Peter Weller didn't want to talk about it. He was notoriously known for being private to this day. And he's like, it's a job. I say some lines, I get paid. You know, what do you want me to say about the movie? You know, that's kind of how he would answer interview questions. Things like that. The movie, you know, being a mid-90s film, it uses some CGI and also some practical effects. It's a decent mix. And you know, one thing I give this movie credit for being a lower budget is, The look and feel of the movie is actually pretty solid. It feels apocalyptic. It feels futuristic. The robots are really cool. Some of the CGI is actually, and the stop motion animation is pretty well done for 1995. I mean, it's not Terminator 2 or Abyss levels, but considering the budget they had for this film, it's solid.
It was a very, I wouldn't say low budget. I'd say modest. But yeah, for what they had to work with, I mean, it's not bad. Not bad at all. The only thing that I think, I noticed is whenever they have all the type threes, which is the little boys, come out of the Alliance base. You can tell like the first couple ones in the front, they did like a Planet of the Apes thing where the ones in the front, are great, great makeup, great effects. And then the ones behind them, you can tell like, it's like a cheap face mask and stuff like that. So kind of like the old Planet of the Apes films. That's really the only thing I noticed as far as like, yeah, I guess maybe a criticism on some of the special effects. But, you know, I felt like this film could have been a Peter Verhoeven film, like Total Recall. You know, it looks like something he would have done.
And it starts out the first 5 minutes extremely violent when the dude gets cut up by the screamer. And then the violence kind of tones down the rest of the movie. It's still violent, but not as violent as the opening scene. You watch the opening scene, you're like, man, what am I getting into? This is going to be a really bloody movie.
Yeah.
And it's not as bloody throughout the rest of it, you know?
Yeah. The guy's getting like ripped apart, just like Peter Weller did in the beginning of RoboCop. The guy loses a freaking arm. He loses a leg, you know? He's like, oh, getting blasted apart by this autonomous sword. And you're just like, man, what the heck is this, you know? Hell are you? Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, overall, the costume work, the set designs, the feel of the movie, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool stuff. And it's one of those movies, like I said earlier, it's really cool, bold ideas that are executed pretty well for the most part. There's just some stuff. It's more like the last 20 minutes of the film are probably the biggest problem. It's like all of a sudden they're like, they have this quest picture where they're going across to find this base. And then it's like, okay, we need some sort of action-packed ending now that we know that there's no message to deliver and there's no peace. What do we do? Okay, let's make up a bunch of shit going along that they did all these people robots. Like, the biggest thing is, why is his friend a robot? So was his friend a robot the whole time he was in the base with his friend, and his friend never attacked him after all those years? It's like, but yet like his friend conveniently showed up across the planet to kill him. Like, wait, where did this dude come from?
How did you beat us here? We just came from there, you know.
So that part's kind of like, oh. And then like the chick that he falls in love with, there's all of a sudden another chick. Like, where does she come from?
Yeah.
And it's like, they just, these characters just show up at the end to have this action packed sequence. Then there's this, this is supposed to be an escape ship to use for the Alliance, but yet it's conveniently got this high tech radar covering it that will disintegrate you if you go through the radar. I'm like, if you work for the Alliance and your own hand gets you in there, you can't turn off this fancy electrical radar system. Like, exactly. Wait, what? I was thinking that too. It's like, you know, that was like, you can't turn it off. So you're risking yourself falling through this beam and zapping yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of that stuff doesn't make sense, but
yeah,
you know, it is what it is. It's, you know, well, I would say it's 80s cheese, but it's like, it's 90s cheese.
It feels like an 80s sci-fi flick, even though it came out in the 90s. It
really does.
And the movie also works, honestly, because Peter Weller, man, he sells the film. Peter's great, one of those guys, yeah, that, you know, in sci-fi circles, people know who Peter Weller is, but he's not like, he's never made the echelon, you know, but it always feels like he could have been an echelon style action star, you know, but he chose smaller roles and smaller work. And, you know, like, he really, if you go watch like the RoboCop documentary, like, he liked being a RoboCop, but at the same time, he didn't like it. You know, he never wanted to be this big star. You know, he liked doing smaller films and stuff. And so, you know, and so he chose that path to kind of choose to do smaller roles. But he did some cult classics, you know, with Buckaroo Banzai, RoboCop, and Leviathan, and this film. You know, I don't even know if RoboCop's considered a cult classic. In some ways, I guess it is. But definitely Screamers is kind of a cult classic. Your overall impression of it, though, being your first time you ever saw it.
No, I appreciate the film. You know, I can see why it may have flopped, because if you look at the trailer, you don't really know what the movie's about. If you look at the original trailer and then the poster, it just looks like a generic 80s,
right?
You know,
and like you said, I just looked, a January 96 release date, that's death back then.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays people go to the movies all year round. But back then, once Christmas season was over, no one's going to the movie in January.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then it's like, because it was, and then apparently it wasn't well televised. So it has not the greatest trailer, not a good poster, not very well televised. It's no wonder why it didn't do too well in theaters and why it blew up on the home video market. I think it could have definitely made its money back plus some, and been a modest success at least.
Right.
But I like the film. The score is good too. I think the music is good whenever they're getting attacked. The score makes sense. And like you said, Peter Weller is great in the film. You know, he's solid. If you're a Peter Weller fan, you know, check out this film.
Yeah, it definitely feels like one of those films back in the mid to late 90s when you're going to the video store with your parents and you saw this on the box art. You're like, man, I want to check this out. You know, and that's why, like you said, it was successful. You know, but I it's an enjoyable film. You know, and we watched it on the I watched it on Tubi. I know it's available on the Roku channel as well. And you know, and but fun stuff, man. You know, it's also one of those movies that we always talk about this too. Like, this feels like it could have a modern remake with big special effects and be kind of cool and shore up the indie a little bit, you know, make it a little bit more tighter, a little bit, make a little more sense towards the end.
Well, the original ending was supposed to be that Peter Weller's character gets away and goes to Earth. And then he sees like a bunch of her replicas there in the crowd. And then he realizes that everybody is, you know, as an autonomous sword except for him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's the big reveal, but he's like, oh, I don't like that. You know, I want to leave it open-ended. And so
that would have been cool, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he would keep seeing multiples of her in the crowd instead of there being him seeing multiples of her before he escaped.
Yeah.
That's whenever you'd see it. But yeah, Peter Weller, he had some, he had a lot of pull on the story. Not more so than the director, but they gave him some leeway with that.
Yeah. I think that would have been cool though. I would have found that ending.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it was fun stuff. Screamers, man. It's a cool flick, man. If you've never seen it, looking for something to watch and you're bored one afternoon. So it kind of got me thinking, man, about future tech and stuff like, so we haven't done a top five in about a few weeks. So we're like, what would be some top five scary future tech? And, I had some fun with this, kind of some tongue in cheekness with it. But I'm going to let you go first because I want to see what your number five is.
I would say, you know, that, that microchip that someone tried to say someone was trying to develop to put in your head so that you can stream your own music and listen to it whenever you want. And they're
that
like,
was Elon Musk at one time. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that was Elon. And it's like, people are like, what if someone hacks you? And now, you know, all you can hear is like weird shit in your head, you know, and be kind of crazy.
My first one was thumb money, dude. Like you see in the movies where people pay with their thumb.
Yeah.
Like, man, what happens if people go start chopping people's thumbs off? Like, hey, you're a billionaire. How easy would it be for me to chop your thumb off and run? And then I wipe out your bank account, you know?
Exactly.
Like, let's keep money on cards and cash. Let's not go handprints on money on. I don't want my thumb chopped off. Not that I'm worth a lot, but you know,
yeah.
That's kind of a scary thought, man. That you just pay with your thumb and someone's watching you over there like, oh, he just bought $1,000 TV. I'm going to go chop his thumb off, you know?
Yeah. I would say flying cars, flying
transportation. Well, people can't drive as it is, let alone fly a fucking car.
Well, and then if you run out of gas, you know, how many of these people run out of gas on the highway? You're just going to fucking fall, dude, you know, and you're going to fall through a bunch of other, you know. So I think that's not good.
No. You know, this has always freaked me out ever since we watched Minority Report, and that's eye scanners, man. It's how do I know they're scanning my eyes? What if they're scanning my brain and they know what I jerked off to the night before? You know, that's kind of freaks me out, man. You know, I don't want them to know that. Never mind. But eye scanners, man. You know, and there's real tech, man. The military uses eye scanners and retinal technology, and there's been talks about them. You know, putting that into airports and things like that. You know, so that's kind of, you know, there was already back last September when I saw Guns N' Roses and I kind of looked at the security thing real quick. They already got this tech where they can like scan your body and see if like they say your pockets are poofy or whatever, looking for guns. Yeah. They already have tech like that, man. You know, it's like eye scanners. No.
Oof. And man, that's another thing. Minority Report in itself, like, you know, Did you know stuff that you might do in the future or that they suspect that you're going to do and you get arrested for it. So preventative, like future preventative crime. And then trying to arrest people for crimes they didn't commit, but they might do it, but they didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
No, not good. Do you have another one?
I would say I recently saw a couple weeks ago that two Teslas wrecked because of something a person in a self-driving car did that caused them to like not see each other. And both people were in like that automated drive mode. And so it's like self-driving cars too. So it's like even technology like that. I think Volkswagen tried to have a self-driving car prototype. And it drove into a fake dummy that they were trying to show everybody. Oh yeah, it's not going to drive into anybody. And then it scans people, and it does. It fucking kills you.
Living robots, and like you
iRobot.
I saw a video the other day about this in Japan. There's some restaurant that has a testing out a robot waitress. It's like what?
Yeah.
And then you watch this movie like this, what if they become sentient and they throw their plate of food at you because you bitch that it was cooked wrong and whack you upside the head or a rogue police officer robot that decides to, you know, doesn't like someone on the side of the road. Living robots are kind of freaky, man. If they come out in the future,
Yeah. And that's with like, I mean, think of every, you know, any sci-fi horror that you've watched. I mean, Terminator, obviously.
Always fucking robots, man. We gotta learn from our own movies.
iRobot. And then Facebook tried to come up with a, like an algorithm, language, like a self-learning algorithm language. But, I guess one of the earlier concepts, they started creating their own languages and and forming their own like little society. And so they shut it down. It's like they always become sentient. And I mean, the Matrix, you know, it's basically machines that were like, hey, you know what? The human race is like vermin. We need to exterminate them. They're the problem. So, yeah, all of that.
All right. You have another one or you want me to keep going?
No, that's it. That's all I can think of right now.
Do virtual reality porn. Okay.
Oh.
Now, hear me out on this. I know it already exists. It's really expensive for people who have headsets. But full on, where I'm talking in the future when we're playing PlayStation 10 and it's all on VR headsets, okay? There's no more consoles. It's all your headsets over your TV. And here's why. Not that I wouldn't enjoy VR porn, but the world's done. Nothing's going to get done. Everybody's going to be sitting at home watching VR porn. The world's done. That's you know, it would cause a new kind of addiction. And that's why. And which leads my number one, sex robots. What if they come alive and they chop your dick off?
Oh, I didn't think about that.
What if you're deep inside that sex robot and it malfunctions?
Oh, yeah, dude. Clamps down.
Clamps down. It's a little scary, you know, if you think about it, right? Yeah. You know, this is the future tech that frightens me. So a lot of it's all centered around robots and tech that just could cause other dangerous issues like, you know, murders and things like that. And, you know, I didn't think about the flying cars one. That's a good one, though, man. These motherfuckers can't drive as it is. And I don't be walking down the street and a car fly out of the sky and smash me in the head.
You know? Exactly.
That would be a bad day.
Yeah. You know?
So I think there's a lot to be said about Hollywood and these movies they do. And we need to learn from them. You know. Yeah. Fair to say?
Fair to say, man.
Fair to say. All right. Well, we had to have some fun with that top five today. All right, man. We are moving into next week is the end of March. And we're getting ready for Godzilla X Kong, the new empire next week. And we'll also, you know, probably talk Ghostbusters Frozen Empire on the show next week. But it's going to be our April theme month because the new episode will come out on Monday, April 1st, starting next week. And and this month, this year's April theme month is Monsters, Monsters, Monsters. Simple title. As we're going to discuss some good monster films over the years and talk a few great monster films. And we're going to kick it off with none other than the King of the Monsters himself. As he's celebrating 70 years of cinema starting this November. And his, you know, he had a huge Oscar win with Best Visual Effects for Godzilla Minus One. And we got a new Godzilla movie in theaters next week. So we're going to go back to 1954 and kick off our Monsters, Monsters, Monsters month with the original, the OG 1954 film, Godzilla.
Godzilla, King of the Monsters, alive, surging up from the depths of the sea on a tidal wave of terror to wreak vengeance on mankind.
Godzilla, King of the Monsters, it's alive.
A gigantic beast,
stalking the earth, crushing all before it.
In a cyclonic cavalcade of electrifying horror.
Raging through the streets on a rampage of total destruction.
Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Incredible titan of terror.
Wiping out a city of 6 million in a holocaust of flame.
Jet flames cannot destroy it.
Bombs cannot kill it.
All modern weapons fail.
Is this the end of our civilization?
Can the scientists of the world find a way to stop this creature?
For the answer, see Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
You may wish to deny it, but your eyes tell you it's true.
A tale to stun the mind.
More fantastic than any ever written by Jules Verne.
More terrifying than any ever shown on the screen.
Awesome.
Incredible.
Unbelievable.
A story beyond your wildest dreams.
dynamic violence.
Savage action.
Spectacular thrills.
Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Fantastic beyond comprehension.
Gripping beyond compare.
Astounding beyond belief.
The mightiest monster of them all.
See Godzilla,
King of the Monsters.
Yeah, man.
This is an all-time classic. One of the greatest. It still holds up well. If you've never seen Godzilla, then I don't know what to tell you. Go on HBO Max and watch it.
Yeah.
Because
it's very rare that a movie and its prequel come out in the same year and win at the Oscars.
What?
Oppenheimer.
Oh,
wasn't that the prequel?
You got that off some movie yeah, website.
I saw that on a meme.
That has nothing to do with the movie we're talking about next week at all.
Oh, I thought that the bomb caused Godzilla.
It did, but that still had nothing to do with Godzilla Minus One. We're talking the 1954 film.
Yeah.
Godzilla Minus One is not the... Matt, shut up.
Oppenheimer's the real father of Godzilla.
I'm sorry, people. I will apologize for that. We almost made it to the end of the show. We almost made it without him derailing it. But anyway, next week we will talk the original black and white Japanese film, 1954's Godzilla. And the original Japanese version, not the Americanized version called Godzilla King of the Monsters, which is the trailer you just heard on the show, because that's really the only trailer that's available that's in English. So I had to do the English language version of the film, but we're not doing the one with Raymond Burr spliced in the scenes to make it Americanized. We're going to do the original Japanese Godzilla film next week. But until then, until we kick off Monsters, Monsters, Monsters Month, the Rebel Radio Podcast.com, of course, as I mentioned earlier, for all your Rebel Radio needs. And until next time, thank you as always for listening. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And remember, as always, just go there and do it.